We're in Epiphany. It's the fourth Sunday of Epiphany. Epiphany is always about learning more about Christ. What can we gather anew and afresh in regard to our understanding of who Jesus is for us? And that's why I've chosen this year to use as a guide for us the seven I Am sayings of Christ. When Christ says, I Am, He is referring to that name of God, Yahweh, the great I Am. But He adds more description than just the eternality of God. He adds things like, I am the bread of life. I am the light of the world. And both of those that we've looked at in previous weeks are so much more interesting, at least on the surface it appears, than a gate. You know, when we think about bread, it's something that satisfies and sustains us. It allows us to meet our deepest needs and hunger. When we think about light, we know of the darkness that we're trying to wrestle through and work through, and we can instantly connect to the idea of the light of God guiding us in the person of Christ. But when it comes to the third saying, it's not quite as dramatic. I mean, you can gush. Your juices almost begin to salivate in your mouth when you think of fresh baked bread, just straight out of the oven. That seems like a wonderful thing to us. Or to think of a beautiful lamp that sheds its light and allows everyone to bask in its glow. But when we think of a gate, it certainly doesn't seem to have that aura or romantic quality. And that's why many commentators, when they come to this, I am the gate for the sheep, they quickly skip over it and move into the theme of the shepherd. So that the gate is kind of lost, and we move instantly to the idea of the good shepherd, which you'll notice Jesus hasn't mentioned yet. He'll say that next week in the following verses. Right now, He just wants us to focus on the fact that He is the gate for the sheep. And that's what I hope to do this morning. We don't want to instantly move to the shepherd. We want to think, what is it He's trying to communicate with this idea of being the gate for the sheep? And in order to understand the gate for the sheep, we need to understand ancient sheepfolds or sheep pens. These were enclosures made of rock or briars. It's where the shepherds would keep the flock at night. The rocks and briars were structured in such a way that the sheep could not jump over the fence or the rocks, and the rocks were there to keep the sheep safe from predators. The gate is nothing but the entry. It is the entryway through which the shepherd enters and through which the sheep exit. It swings both ways. We're not speaking about a door, and that's why when we say Jesus is the door for the sheep, we're going in the wrong direction, because a door only swings one way. It's a movable partition that either goes out or goes in. A gate, on the other hand, swings in and out, which means it lets in, it lets out. It's protection when it's closed. It is passage to pasture when it's opened. And that's why we want to focus on just the gate, because we're not talking about shepherd here yet. It's just a way in, a way out, a way into protection, a way out to abundant life, to fertile green pastures. Sometimes people, in trying to deal with the gate, will play this wonderful urban legend trick. And that is, they will suggest that, well, when we're talking about Jesus as the gate for the sheep, we're really talking about Jesus being the gate himself as far as a shepherd, in the way a shepherd did. And they will say, in ancient times, shepherds would lay across the front of a gate. There wouldn't actually be a gate, and they themselves would become the gate. They'd protect their flocks by night. No intruder could get in. The problem with that, as devotionally charged as that is, as wonderfully warm as it is to think that the shepherd lies across the gateway, is that there's really no evidence in ancient literature for this. It just doesn't show up. We don't read about this. It's a wonderfully warm devotional thought, but it's not something that seems to have been practiced. One commentator actually says the closest we can get to it is 1940s Bedouins, and that they actually do this, but we don't have any evidence from ancient literature. And what you then discover is what this does when we make the Good Shepherd the gate instantly, without dealing with just the gate, is it's a way to conflate and confuse the two metaphors and make it so that we really don't have to develop the gate. We're just really talking about the Good Shepherd. And so what I want to do is focus on just the gate. And if we look at just the gate, we'll actually end up at this picture with Jesus there without thinking of the Good Shepherd yet. So follow me. I hope you'll be able to, and I know you can. It's not that hard. We're just talking about a gate here. But we oftentimes move too quickly to the shepherd. A gate is an entryway in. It's an entryway into protection. It has a specific function in a sheep pen, and that is it's the authorized entry in. You know who uses the gate in a sheep pen? The shepherd. You know who does not use a gate in a sheep pen? The thieves and robbers. They want to climb over. They want to not come in the authorized way because they're not authorized to be there. They want to come in through a more rogue or deceptive way. And that's important for understanding the gate. If you want a modern example, you've seen movies like I have where thieves go on a bank heist and they dig a tunnel underneath the bank so that the tunnel goes straight up into the vault. They're not going in the authorized entry where people are allowed. They are creating their own entry in order to get into the vault in lieu of the real entry, which is the vault itself. The thieves and bandits that Jesus wants to point to here are those who do not come in the authorized entry. Now the shepherd does, and you'll notice that in our first verse, actually the second, if you'll come here, the one who enters by the gate is the shepherd of the sheep. The gatekeeper opens the gate for him, and the sheep hear his voice, which means you have an authorized entry here. It is God's way of entering. And the reason why that's so important is throughout the Old Testament, there's talk about the shepherds of Israel. We see it in the Ezekiel passage. The shepherds are the political leaders and the religious leaders. And sadly, almost every shepherd of ancient Israel, much like every shepherd of every culture into our modern day, is more concerned about their own interest than the welfare of the flock. They are more concerned about their own prestige. And so the sheep and their welfare is secondary. Instead, they want to, instead of going in the authorized entry of God's way, in the way God would like shepherds to lead, they climb over, they burrow under, they jump over in such a way that they're not shepherding in God's way, and in that sense, they are stealing from the sheep. They are destroying the sheep in order to enhance their reputation. If you look at our Ezekiel 34 passage, you see that again and again. It's devastating to read this, particularly in light of evaluating our own leaders in light of it. That you have shepherds that are only interested in their own selfish interest. They have no real concern for the weak and the weary and the wandering and the hurt and the lonely. Their concern is to amass their own prestige in such a way that people center around them. And in doing that, they deceive and steal. They're removing God's way from the picture. And that's what's going on here. Think of how many constructions in our world. Think of how many situations, whether it's a small institution or a large institution, where there are people in places of authority that clearly are in it for themselves. They are in it for the money they make, the prestige they get, the reputation that they can enhance. The welfare of people, particularly those who are weak and wandering and wounded, is not on the radar. Instead, what is on the radar is making sure that their wealth, their influence, their prestige remains high. It happens in churches as well. There's a quote here which I hate to read because it challenges me to the core of my being, but I'm going to read it anyway because it's mostly about pastors. There are numerous pastors in churches scattered throughout the world who look out not for the interest of their flock, but for their own interest. They promote themselves and build little fiefdoms, temples to their own egos, a microcosmic universe that revolves around the radiant light of their own personality. There is no church or denomination too large or too small to be immune to this type of bad shepherding. Good shepherds are those who ultimately point away from themselves and continually point their sheep to the one true shepherd. A good shepherd will constantly point his or her flock to Jesus, the one who's laid down his life for the sheep. The gate is an entryway in, and that entryway is through Jesus, the gate for the sheep. And because it's Jesus who has shown us abundant grace of God, the very heart of God, the love of God, the love that pursues the wandering sheep and will benefit and help and heal the most wounded, we know that the gateway is one of unimaginable welcome. It is not like our troll keeper who's trying to put up obstacles to people getting in. Instead, the gate is one of a welcome that offers people protection and security, and a place to be. In one sense, you could think of that entryway being an entryway into the church, which is to be a microcosm of God's kingdom, to represent in some way how God would like leaders to lead and people to be. And when we then enter through Christ, we're entering into that sheepfold where we're known by name and loved dearly and protected from the wolves and the thieves and the unauthorized shepherds who would seek to take advantage of us. So it's an entryway in, but we're never just saved from something, we're saved for something. We don't spend our life in the sheepfold any more than the sheep spend all their life in the sheepfold. And that's why when we think of a gate, we also need to think of it as an exit to green pastures, an exit for flourishing. Now notice with me in verse 9 of John 10, "I am the gate, whoever enters by me will be saved, and will come in," that's the entryway in, "and go out." So we're talking about a gate, it swings both ways. "And they go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy, to take advantage of the sheep. But I came that they may have life and have it parousos, abundantly." The Greek word parousos can mean superior, extraordinary, surpassing, uncommon. It is this extraordinary quality of life, this abundance of flourishing that Jesus is speaking of. Sometimes people wrestle with religion and they think that religion is here just to kind of restrain all of our desires, to completely put us in a place where we're just kind of mucking our way through life, surviving as best we can. But Jesus doesn't say that. He says, "I've come that they'd have life abundantly." And he's not just referring to the afterlife here, thank God. He's referring to life. That life is meant to be lived in and through Christ in a way that is abundant, full, extraordinary, superior. A grand adventure that the shepherd leads the sheep on, where they are surrounded by flourishing pastures. And this is then where I have to bring in the shepherd. Because Jesus does bring the shepherd in here. Verse 3, "The gatekeeper opens the gate, the sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he's brought out all his own, he goes ahead of them, and the sheep follow because they know his voice." Here is where we get the picture as we move out of the gate, that the shepherd always goes before. And the shepherd doesn't lead from behind, pushing the sheep out. The shepherd leads from ahead, inviting the sheep individually to follow. Because he knows their name. He knows their markings. He knows what they like, what they don't like. He knows their fears. He's well aware of the individual nature of each sheep. And by calling them by name, he is entrusting them with this sense that they have this recognition, this mutual trust that's developed over time, over the course of spending so many hours together. And they know whose voice to follow. They know how that shepherd says their voice in such a way that they respond. And they also know that the shepherd knows them, each one, by name. It's this deep relationship of trust that allows the sheep to exit the sheepfold through the gate of the sheep and then begin to follow in the way of the shepherd that goes ahead of them, that leads them to green pastures. Jesus next week will build on that by speaking of how he's not only the gate, but he's the good shepherd. But before we go into that good shepherd next week, we've lightly touched on it here, I want to give one more thought about a gate. Because a gate in swinging both ways is an entryway to the sheepfold where there's protection. It's an exit to green pastures where there's flourishing. But it's not a barrier. The gate isn't meant to be a padlocked vault door, just like the troll keeper, where questions come up in order to keep people out. It is not a wall. It's a gate. It's not a padlocked door. It's a gate. And gates are all about entry and access, not exclusion and expulsion. And sadly, some Christians read this saying as if it's really about exclusion and expulsion. We're trying to see who's in, who's out, keep the right people out, make sure the right people are in. And so the gate is sadly turned from this unbelievable welcome of Christ that longs for all to enter, that wants to be the doorway through which people experience life and life abundantly, and it becomes a who's in, who's out. Who's entered, and then who's excluded? Who's on the outside? And in order to keep from that error, my last quote I want to offer you, David Lauer, he's a theologian at Luther Seminary in Minneapolis. He says, "Gate imagery has been used to divide people. Christians from non-Christians, right Christians from wrong, masters from slaves, straight people from gay people. But a good reading of this passage reveals that the gate does not function to separate sheep from other sheep, but to lead sheep in and out of the sheepfold so that they may be protected and fed. Why is that the case? Because the gate's a person. The gate is not a doctrine. The gate is not a dogma. The gate is not religion. The gate is a person, and we know what that person is like. Abundant grace. We've seen the fullness of grace and mercy and peace and truth in Christ. How could we ever turn who he is into this troll gatekeeper? Answer me the question three. Do you believe this right? Have you got that right? We're not dealing with that kind of gate. It is a gate and a gatekeeper that's extraordinarily welcoming, who's made it very clear that this entryway is here so that you can come in and go out. Come into protection, the solidarity of the sheepfold, where the shepherd cares as a good shepherd should care, and then to go out, being led by the shepherd, into pastures where there's an abundance of life. The gate stands on its own. That's what I've tried to do with you this morning. It's an entryway that protects. It's an exit to flourishing. It is not meant to be a barrier. It's meant to be a portal to abundant life. And by all means, it's something we go in and go out regularly. Not just once. One last verse. If you come back down to verse 9 again. I am the gate. Whoever enters by me will be saved. That's usually where those who want to make the gate exclusive and expulsive stop. You see, you need to go in the gate. You're not saved. What they don't do is they don't go on and will come in and go out and find pasture. It's not a one-time thing you do. It's not a thing you check off and you say, okay, I answered the three questions right. Now I'm in, right? It's coming in and going out and coming in and going out like the church does. We gather like we have. We scatter. We come back into the solidarity of the sheepfold. We pray together. We worship together. And then we go out into the world being led by our good shepherd. It's this constant movement back in the gate which makes me wrestle with, are you and am I, verse 9, coming in and going out to find pasture? Is this a gate that we enter regularly, that we recognize Jesus says, I welcome, I want you to know life and to know the solidarity of the sheepfold, the protection that I offer, the love that I administer, the healing grace for your wounds that is there, and do you at the same time exit the gate regularly? So you're not spending all your time there, but you're following the shepherd into the world, knowing that he will only lead to where pastures are available. That he's going to lead in a way that will provide and allow you to know life and to know life abundantly. When you go that far with the gate, then you can come back to this image. But instead of just seeing the shepherd there representing the gate so that the two ideas are conflated, realize that Jesus really is the gate for the sheep like this. That Jesus is the one that invites us in to provide a secure place and that opens up that we might know abundant life. Would you pray with me?